Marketing Online Live number 69, responding to viewer comments.
Welcome to MarketingOnlineLive.com.
Marketing Online Live.
The Internet's first podcast about online marketing with your hosts, Paul Colligan and Alex Mondosian.
Hey everybody, it is Paul Colligan, and welcome to Marketing Online Live, episode number 69. In today's episode, we're going to go back a couple of episodes and talk about some comments and just mention some user interaction and, well, just chat about what you all have been chatting about. The last couple of episodes have got a lot of you talking, a lot of you commenting, and we want to honor your comments by commenting back. So we're going to go back a couple episodes and just chat about what it is that you all had to say. The first episode we want to talk about is episode number 66, How Does Amazon Kindle Change the Comment Game? Some interesting things came across, and got Alex on the phone. We want to chat about them and go from there. First comment. I recently came across Kindle while shopping for Joel Comm's AdSense Secrets and Perry Marshall's Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords over at Amazon.com. My take on it is that owners of this tech can download the book content onto some sort of handheld screen. I thought this was almost revolutionary with great market foresight. However, I somewhat disagree with the concept. Alex, if I want to view a computer screen, wouldn't I just go to my computer and download an ebook? I shop at Amazon because I like flip pages. I can put it down next to me on the bus, don't have to worry about somebody stealing it, much like a technological gadget like a DVD player or whatever. I'd rather replace a $20 book over a laptop or an audiovisual gadget. Your comments?
My comment is, point is well taken, and I agree, and I would like to have all my books downloaded into one handheld gadget so that if I'm looking up a specific page, this is not to read the book, but if I'm looking up a specific page, then I have that there kind of like a portable library, and it makes life very, very easy. This is different also than having a laptop or a PC or downloading an ebook because you're actually reading the book in a whole new platform. It's different. If you buy one, you'll find that the experience is totally unique, it's gorgeous, and it's very user-friendly. I have found that, for me, the number one source of a Kindle is a reference book, of having a compendium of other books, so that I don't have to carry 1,000 books with me anytime I'm traveling of the, you know, leaf-through variety. Also, if I don't want to travel with the book, I can just travel with the Kindle, and if I have to cross-reference with other books, which I typically do, because I read just nonfiction. You know, it's boring, but that's what I read, and that's what's helped build my business and live the lifestyle I live. And so because I dedicate most of my time to nonfiction, a lot of them have recommendations to other books, and I find that most of those are in the Kindle. So if you wanted to go and have a library with you in the palm of your hand, it's a little bigger than most palms, unless you're Wilt Chamberlain, a Kindle is the way to go, and it's different than a laptop or downloading an ebook. Your comments, Paul?
I was in the backyard yesterday. I'm visiting my in-laws in Santa Barbara, California. You know the weather here. I was in the backyard, a sip of iced tea with lemon from the lemon tree in the backyard, and I was flipping through a book. I got an idea for the New Media Expo presentation I'm doing, and I wanted to chat about something from Gerber's The E-Myth. And from the backyard, I looked up the E-Myth, and I purchased the Kindle copy of the E-Myth for $9.99, and before I could take another sip of the iced tea, I had the E-Myth in its entirety on my Kindle. Never got up from the lounge chair. I searched through the book for the quote that I was looking for, found it, highlighted it, and later today when I get to my slides, you know, that piece of research will be an integral part of my presentation next week.
Now, the argument can be, hey, that's a $10 quote, Paul. But the other argument is, yes, and it's saving a ton of time at the time of opportunity cost, and plus you got the book for life.
Exactly. And Amazon, and it is the book for life. It's not like Apple, where you're kind of responsible for your backup copy. You have an Amazon digital license now, and when the next Kindle version 2.3.4 comes out, it is going to be able to transfer to that. Now, the E-Myth is a vital book. It's a book every entrepreneur, I think, should reference at least once a year. And having that thing portable with me is worth its weight in gold. Now, yes, a Kindle is more than one book in weight, about, you know, paperback. A hardback book actually weighs more. But once you look 2, 3, 4, once you go into this whole library thing, then the Kindle is an incredibly valuable time saver.
The Kindle becomes, for all intents and purposes, at this point in time, without any new innovations, it becomes your 101 favorite book library. I mean, you'll have more than that in there. But, you know, your favorite books, you probably review 80% of the time. In fact, I'm going to say it's not an 80-20 or 20-80 relationship. I think it's more like 5-95. 95% of the time, you're only going after 5% of your library. So let the Kindle represent that. And for the extra few bucks that, you know, it's going to cost you, you know, for me, sometimes I'll buy two books, you know, one to dog ear and the other one to keep a good copy. You know, the Kindle, to me, is the most cost-efficient and cost-effective way to carry my favorite books around. And that's talking to someone, me, that's talking to not just Techno Challenge, but I don't like new tech. I don't like one or even 2.0 versions. So, yeah, I'm a believer because of the sex appeal and the user interface that is just gorgeous.
Now, let's go a step further. You embrace this thing. I embrace this thing. Several high-level, you know, marketing types embrace this thing. Now, I'm on that lounge chair yesterday. I look up Gerber's The E-Myth, and let's say it's not there. And let's say that moment of opportunity is passed. Gerber doesn't get the quote during my presentation. Gerber didn't make the $9.99 that he made for me for the download. Gerber loses a bit of cachet in my mind share because I wasn't able to grab him quickly. Now, anybody can go out to Amazon.com and get their book in the Kindle library instantly. I mean, you have to upload it, so I guess it's a few minutes. But not only was it convenient for me, but can you imagine... I mean, Alex, if you were to look up a business book and it wasn't available in the Kindle, you know, wouldn't some subconscious level of your mind go, well, gee, why aren't they in there?
Yeah, either there's a political reason or it's a reason of basic ignorance. What's interesting to me is that it's a just-in-time age. Everyone is in a just-in-time mode. We're in a recommendation age and we're in a just-in-time age. And the information age is not dead. It's just so big that just-in-timeness, such as a search engine, and recommendation, such as a search engine, becomes the law of the land. So the Kindle becomes another just-in-time tool and a recommendations tool, because you're going to look for the titles that are on the Kindle, of a way to make your life better, easier, and make your presentations more impactful. In your case, citing a direct quote from Michael Gerber.
Exactly. Let's go to episode number 67, which is more profitable, improvement or invention? And by the way, everybody, I want to encourage you, we like this dialogue. Podcasting is a dialogue. There's lots of ways to send us that dialogue. You can leave us a message under any of the episodes. Just click on that episode. There's a place for comments. We take comments, monitor them on a regular basis. We read them many times, like you hear today. We respond to them. So you can do that. You can leave us a voicemail. We've got a phone line just for Marketing Online Live at 206-339-2954. That's 206-339-2954. You can also give us an email at talk@marketingonlinelive.com. We love hearing this stuff from you. So, improvement or invention, which one is more? Tony Baker gave us just a great little quote, and I want to read the whole thing because it was just so solid. He said, "Inventing is difficult. Because in many cases, if there was a need for it, it would very likely already exist. However, with improvement, you could take what's already needed and increase the need by making it easier to use or by making it more powerful. For instance, when the internet was invented, they spent 20 or 30 years convincing people that they needed it, with very little improvement along the way. However, once people recognized that they needed the internet, the influence of improvements over the last 15 years has increased 100-fold, if not by an unmeasurable larger amount. Need drives improvement. Invention simply creates the opportunity for need. This is why the invention has been tossed aside while improving things we actually care about constantly being made." So what comes to mind to me here is, you know, the audience knows I'm a bit of a geek, and I remember reading the book about the people, the guys who basically, for lack of a term, invented the internet, and it wasn't Al Gore. It was a group of engineers, and this invention, you know, paid their bills. and their paycheck from the government and the organizations they were working for. Certainly, this enabled this, but there are no extremely wealthy inventors of the internet. There are no extremely wealthy, you know, protocol types out there. The guys who made the money were the ones who improved on it through things such as the Netscape browser, the Google search engine, you know, the Kindle that uses the very internet we know to deliver the books, you know, to a handheld platform. And I thought it was funny, all the examples we gave, and then Tony went straight to the source of this. Improvement is hands down where all the opportunity is. I think about New Media Expo next week, and I think about the two camps of podcast producers that are out there. And we've been talking about them for the last 4 years of this show. Those ones who view podcast as this new entity that should and needs and must stand alone all by itself. And then we have the ones who take the podcast format, the podcast channel, and use it to send other content they have in other ways. Taking a teleseminar, shooting it out by a podcast later. Taking a class, letting everybody who has the class know that it'll be on their iPods the next morning. That's where the revenue is. That's where the money stream is. You know, that's what my presentation will be about. And that's what those who are making the profit are beginning to recognize. You know, Alex, when you did that posting, I'm guessing that's your most commented on blog post?
It was until I did the recent Walt Disney post on tenacity.
Okay, yeah.
And that won out. But prior to that, it was that. And I got the most heated comments as well, probably from inventors.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with being an inventor. And God bless the inventors, but it's almost like, you know, do you want to be a professional chef, or do you want to find a great job that, you know, pays you enough money so that you can be a chef on the side? Two different paths. You know, there are only so many people making an incredible living as a chef. There are a lot of people making an incredible living who have a chef's kitchen. And I think those inventors out there, those people who want to exist only within the element that they've discovered and almost want to shun everybody else, you know, I'm going to ask, at what point and why? And what are you doing to yourself along the way? I've been chewing on this, and that's what Gerber, you know that's what Gerber's all about. You know, all these entrepreneurs who had one element and thought that element was the only thing they needed and then left, then ended up, you know, failing miserably because they just couldn't comprehend and couldn't put their arms around the bigger picture.
Well, my comment on this is that if you're listening and you're thinking about in value creation, value add terms, is invention creating value and is improvement simply adding value? And I don't know if that crossed your mind or not, if you're listening, but if it has, I believe that inventing and improving creates value. It creates new value that never existed. It doesn't just add the value. It creates value. The only difference is with invention, it's value created that's not recognized as value because it may be ahead of its time. With improvement, it's value created that is recognized as value, and that's why it catches on sometimes like a wild brush fire through the marketplace. And so the key to improvement is that it's creativity in making the existing truth more fascinating. And that's where it creates value. What is the iPod? Well, the iPod right now is an MP4 player. What was it before? Well, it was an MP3 player with a screen on it, a big screen, and it had a lot of sex appeal, and it was big, and it just looked different. It was thin, and it's changed shape, and it's been driving me crazy. That's why I don't pre-purchase them anymore, because my boxes keep changing size. So it's like I have to go to something that stays the same shape for a period of time, over a year. But what is the iPod? It plays music. It plays video. Right now, it's an MP4 player. But is it? I think it's an improvement. It didn't invent the MP4 system. But that's exactly what it is from original equipment manufacturing terminology. So when you look at the iPod and think of it as a invention, well, think again. It's not. I mean, the Kindle is not an invention. That's not the first book reader of any by any means. It's probably the sexiest. It's the most improved. I don't know why people lose fascination with most improved. You know, as an athlete, I found that it was a lot more revering for anyone to win most improved than most valuable, because the most improved person had to go beyond natural talent and just improve, whereas most valuable typically was the most talented kid on the block. You could get someone who was not very good at a specific sport and still win most improved, and I think that that is just as noble, if not more noble, than the most valuable, even though most valuable may have scored the most goals or, you know, had the most leadership on the team. So I really like most improve. It happens to be my verb. I improve, therefore I am. And when you look at the course of history, it's the improvement that changes what the world's history has been shaped into. It's not in battle, for example, to take a more destructive example, but it's worth noting. An improvement on battle equipment, you know, let's say the bow and arrow over the axe. Okay, obviously the bow and arrow, the archer had a huge advantage, and that created a lot of value, and probably nations won wars because of archers and the bow and arrow versus just the sword or the axe. Well, you know, when when something could shoot bullets, when that improvement came around, then that was an improvement over the bow and arrow. And entire civilizations have been flourishing and have died out of improvements, in this case for survival. So I think it always comes down to improvement, and I think if you believe in Darwinistic theory, the most survival of the fittest is the survival of the most improved. Now, I'm sure those comments I just made will get plenty of comments from many different camps. The fact is, I believe them to be unarguable truths, and I know that improvement has much more value creation potential because it's recognized as value, whereas invention is not. When someone invented the fax machine in the 1860s, who happened to be a Scotsman, that had no value because it was only one fax machine. Fast forward over 100 years to the 1980s until there are enough fax machines to create a network for that to have a creation of value that is noble. And by the way, the improvement from thermal fax paper to regular fax paper, that improvement was huge because that caused me to buy more fax machines. So improvement is where value is. And I firmly believe if you focus on improvement in looking at it as creation of value, you'll feel like you are an inventor, which you should, because you are inventing when you're improving.
So speak of improvement and iPods and standards, and let's go back to Marketing Online Live number 64, where we asked the question, how far do we go with the iPod as the de facto standard? You know, we talked about these boxes, the shipments, how you are the, at least as far as we know, one of the, you know, biggest personal purchasers of iPods on the planet. A lot of comments on that one. There were five. The one that really interests me is the one that came from Nat, and he says, well, he started with don't forget the web browser and wrote a little bit. But then at the end, he says, I think as a publisher or someone like my company who creates services for publishers, you want to publish once and have as many different distribution methods available for your audience to consume your show, which is the philosophy we take. But my sense is that the easiest way for many people to consume podcasts is by clicking a play button on some Flash-based browser application that plays right away. And you get a bunch of show notes with links that you can visit right away, channel info, and everything else. Don't forget that the market for the often used browser and web surfers dwarf the MP3 device market. Absolutely great point, Nat. But the great thing here is if you go to every listing for Marketing Online Live, every one of them has the click to play button. The little triangle pointing over to the right, which is the universal symbol for play, it's there. Now, the move of the audience, and we do get a majority of people, a good chunk of people listen this way. And for those who listen this way, thank you. But the power of podcasting as a technology is when you pick it up and you move it to a portable device. Now, Alex and I love it when people consume us in front of their desktop, but I love it even more when they consume us at the gym, or when they consume us in the car, or when they consume us in the airplane.
When they disconnect, when they disconnect from, let's call it, the umbilical cord of the internet, either with their mouth or mouse, with their mouse or a USB cord. You know, when they're connected to the internet, it really is, you know, their umbilical cord to the rest of the world, and there's a lot of life and oxygen there. But once they're disconnected and they're not listening to their browser, and I agree with the comment. I mean, the browser is my chosen method of listening. But when I'm disconnected, then I have fewer distractions. And when I have fewer distractions, I have more mind share than wondering what the Google search on a specific term would be, or what other website I'd want to be visiting, or what document I have to finish on my Word application. And so the disconnection process, I believe, in theory, I can't prove this to be true, but if I am listened to, if Alex or if Paul is listened to after being disconnected, that's what the pod part of podcasting is. That's where, in the palm of their hands, they being your listener or viewer, they are taking you, and you have a more intimate mind share at that point, or viewer share, and it's a lean forward mechanism, which, Paul, you can expound upon if people don't realize what lean forward versus lean back media is. Lean forward happens to be on a web browser as well, but the fact is, if you're leaning forward because you're completely disconnected with the rest of the internet, in many cases, listening to the podcast, then I find that to have more mind share at that moment and getting more attention with fewer distractions. Now, I can't prove it, Paul, but I feel that it is a viable argument and it's worth noting.
Well, you can't prove it, but there are some things in life that just make a heck of a lot of sense. If I can have a lean forward moment with you where it's just you and me, that's tremendous. If I have a lean forward moment with you where it's you, me, instant messaging, email, radio in the background, dogs barking, the whole nine yards, it's just not going to have as much impact.
Well, here's the example. You've been at events, and let's say you're at an event that has, I was recently at an event that had 2,000 people. It was in Singapore. If I'm in the middle of that crowd of 2,000 as an instructor, and I have people approaching me, and I'm talking to one person, even with the most polite people who happen to be standing next to me, I am being distracted because they're trying to get my attention. That's no different than being connected to the net. Now imagine if I'm speaking to that same person in a soundproof room or in a room that is just he and I. Well, that's what the iPod could be when you're traveling, because you're alone in the room with whoever it is on the podcast and you. So it's a very simple way of looking at it, and I just happen to think when your attention is more, or a larger percentage of your attention is on the content that's being provided because you're disconnected from the distractions of the net, because it can be very distractive, of course, as many people realize. Email can be very distractive. Just hearing that another email came through, if you have your audio on, that can be very distractive. I think that the ability to have browser and pod, where it's taken with you on the go, that's what makes podcasting so unique, and that's why, you know, we've been doing this for almost 70 episodes.
And it's not invention. It is improvement, because if I told Alex the only possible way people would hear this content is if they had an iPod, we wouldn't have signed up for this. The click-to-play button that people know from the past with things such as audio generator is what lets us reach as many people as is possible. So the existing concept of web audio was improved on with this feature. And then the invention of podcasting let us take that same stuff and shoot it out to more people. So our last question comes from last week's episode, number 68, where we talked about remote studio audio. And I do recommend you definitely take a look at that one again. It's got a lot of interest. I've got a lot of email and tweets from you, and thank you for that. But Bob asked a question, and it was a great one, something that we didn't cover. Do you really run it through the levelator before you add the intro and outro music? And what Bob's asking is, you know, well, why don't you just take the podcast piece and run that when you're done through the levelator? And the answer there, and the running through the levelator process, that's on the video. You can see that if you head out to Marketing Online Live, click on episode 68, or just click on remotestudioaudio.com. That will take you right there. We've got a really nice little YouTube video of the process. the reason we levelate the individual pieces is because there are times when these individual pieces go out as individual products independent from the podcast. And that's the value of this. That's the value of this process. And so by thinking of everything you have in terms of how much value that can bring you through all the different channels, that's where the real strength is. So all of our elements are levelated, and when we mix them together, because they were all levelated to the same number, you know, they're all on the same piece. But yes, every time I take a presentation from me and Alex, we clean up just that presentation, level it accordingly so that we can shoot it out by CD, by podcast, by DVD, portable media player, or whatever makes the most sense for that particular distribution mechanism. So great question, Bob, and it's something we missed, but I wanted to cover that up for you all. Alex, any comments on that one?
No comments. My only comment is with reference to podcasting and consumption. It is a huge mistake if you think that your method of consumption is the only way others consume. And it's a huge mistake to think that the way others consume is the way you're going to consume. The mistake runs both ways. So just assume that if there's a possibility of something being consumed in another format other than what you're used to, then that possibility is reality and will happen. And you never know who's going to be consuming it. It could be the CEO of a Fortune 10 company or a Fortune 500 company. In my case, it was a CEO of a Fortune 1 company, and as a result, has landed me the single biggest deal of my life. And so the bottom line is how people consume doesn't matter. It's making it available to them and improving the consumption process to make it faster, to make it easier, and to make it with the least amount of human effort possible. And that's my piece on consumption. I think nothing is more important as we're going into this just-in-time recommendation age.
Absolutely, Alex. I couldn't have said it better. We appreciate your comments, and it was fun going back a couple episodes and respond accordingly. You've been listening to Marketing Online Live, number 69. We'll be back.
You've been listening to MarketingOnlineLive.com.
Marketing Online Live.
With your hosts, Paul Colligan and Alex Mondosian. If you're a subscriber of this show, the next episode is coming soon. If you haven't yet subscribed and would like to have our show delivered directly to you, search for Marketing Online Live at iTunes or visit www.marketingonlinelive.com.